condition, my condition was ill.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Well, North Bay Snacks and Jacks. I'll come on, Ricky on the board. What a dreary, rainy day here in Chicago. Soon to be cold, I guess. SP Futures down 3, NASDAQ Futures down 41. See, after a massive up day yesterday, and I mean massive, we were up 2% pretty much across the board. We're not sure why, other than we were down last week, and after all, everybody knows that the strategy is buy the dip, and, you know, somebody wants to put some money in or something, but off we were to the races, and nobody was in the way, and the equity markets are getting wider and wider. The VIX is still over 20 on a holiday week after a big up day, so that, I don't know what that tells you. Do we have Professor Carl?
You do.
What's all this telling us? You're a guy who's supposed to know everything. Tell me who's the most valuable NHL hockey team.
Oh, I don't know that one.
According to these guys, it would be the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have pegged it there, but okay.
I will say this, it's probably, I don't know that much about soccer or anything, but I'm going to say it's still probably the hardest ticket in North America to get.
Well, there you go.
You can get into, I actually looked one day, and you can get in if you get individual seats, but try and get two together.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, yeah. So I, you know, one of the things I think is amusing about this is, and I wrote some commentary on this not all that long ago with, you know, when NVIDIA's earnings report came out a few days back, and said, you know, there's two basic problems with the story. Okay, and they don't really have anything to do with the circular financing stuff. They have to do with just the basics, the basic metrics on which the company is operating. And the first one is that they're posting up 50% gross margins. Okay, and the second one is that their patents have run out. Now, the second one, of course, they haven't said anything about, but they have on the language. Okay, the CUDA language.
Is that a footnote? If you have two or three big patents that are running out, I mean, is that something you have to put in your quarterly or annual?
I don't know if they do or not, but the CUDA, the so when you buy a NVIDIA graphics card,
when you say a CUDA, I think a car.
Right. So
the old Barracuda.
Well, sort of, yeah. So when you buy an NVIDIA graphics card, there's the language that the chip uses to process things is called CUDA. Okay. And so, like, if I go into, and there's two competing ones for graphics use, OpenCL and CUDA. Okay. Well, CUDA is NVIDIA's, and years ago, back when this AI stuff first started getting like really nuts, and I was invited to, you know, to be a panelist at an academic conference. One of the things that, of course, whenever they do these, they have an exhibit floor, right, with the different manufacturers and stuff down there that are trying to hawk stuff to whoever it is that's coming to the conference. And NVIDIA had a booth down there, and I went and I talked to them for a while because you get to hang around while you're waiting your turn to do your thing. And I said, you know, I said, there's two basic problems here with your story. I said, the first one is that I've got all kinds of problems with what they're doing with regards to AI and copyright and things like this. I said, I think there's a ticking nuclear bomb in there. It may or may not explode, but if it does, okay, there's going to be big trouble. You guys won't be the ones that get burned by it because you're making shovels. You're not the ones digging up the
ground. Well, you will if you lose two of your four clients in 6 months.
Well, but you're not going to get directly sued, okay? It's those guys that are going to get directly sued. It's the downstream impact that gets you. I said, but the bigger problem is, you guys, this technology, this basic, the basic language was something that showed up about, 12, 13, 14 years ago, which means your patent's going to run out, right? And when it does, and it will, you've got another problem, which is you're not the only ones that make chips. You're not the only ones that make high-density chips. Okay, you've got Intel, you've got AMD, you've got a bunch of other people who would like to be, ARM Holdings, which is the owner, if you will, of the chips that are in the core of most of your handheld devices, your phones and stuff. But you've got several other companies that have large-scale, high-density, high-power, high-output chip manufacturing capability. NVIDIA is not even close. I mean, they're a relative newcomer to the space. They're, by no stretch of the imagination, the only people doing this. And now, just in the last few days, we've seen some announcements from some of these guys, the Googles of the world and such, that they are going to build AI clusters using somebody else's stuff. Okay, here we are. You know, it's the problem. What I've always observed throughout my years in business, Chief, is that 10%, a 10% gross margin is about where you start to attract attention from other people.
I would say you're right about that.
In terms of someone trying to shoot at you, right? Less than that, they can, but the economic incentive isn't really there for them to do it. Once you cross that 10% threshold, you start to attract attention. And
sometimes patents on small things are better than patents on big things.
Well, but you lose your moat, basically, when they expire, right? And I asked the guys, we're just going to own the entire business by the time that, either of those two things happens. Okay, well, we'll see how well that works. If you run around with an operating margin of, 12 or 15, you might because it's not worth it for people to put up the investment and, post it up to come after you. And, with that much of a differential, maybe not.
Well, we did what Carl's talking about, not that you need me to explain, it's pretty obvious what he's talking about, but we used to do a lot of work. We used to in grad school. We did a lot of work on pricing of stuff and how it affects motivation. And what you're saying is actually I won't say a quarter, but it's a half a quarter in business almost. And how exactly you price. And for instance, if you pop out, boy, if you're really old, you remember. Say the hula hoop. All right. Of a sudden, the thing pops out there, and you get say there were no patents. And it costs you a certain amount to get a hula hoop factory, whatever it would even look like, and you're popping these things out. And it costs you $2 a hula hoop. All right. Well, if you price it at 10, and the thing becomes wildly popular, I think people are pretty clever. I bet people can copy that and get another factory pretty darn quick. So everybody's going to die to get in there if they can charge 8 or something.
Right.
But if you charge 4, and somebody says, well, I'd like to get in there, but all of a sudden these two mopes, Carl and Chief, they can drop it to 3, and then what am I doing?
And I'm dead.
Well,
yeah.
You're not dead. Just what am I doing here?
You're not making enough to make it worth it.
Yeah. Right. So it's a question of how greedy do you want to be? And when you mention the word patents, there are some patents where people go out and if you get a left-handed monkey wrench and you get a patent on it, okay, well, fine. And if you're charging too much in a year or so, somebody's going to get one really darn close that's going to do the same job. And even though you have a patent, if you get greedy, you're going to get... The only place that seems to not work out is in our favorite place, the medical establishment. It's almost like if somebody gets a patent, everybody else backs off and then goes get their own. Now, I can't believe that, for instance, and the one I always zero in on is because it's one for a lot of Medicare people are on, and you know if you listen to a heart guy, they want everybody on them, the blood thinners.
Yeah, the Eliquis stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
That and the Xarelto. Those are like the two, but there's never been a third. I mean,
right.
And yet these guys have hung in there really now for like 15 years, which is kind of a long time, you know.
Well, yeah, and one of the problems that you have in the pharmaceutical industry is, in particular, that our government, it doesn't matter who's in office, which side of the aisle it is, they won't go after it, is that the abuse that these guys run through the patent office without either having it, you know, to get told to go screw a turkey or, you know, or for that matter, coming after them for criminal abuse of process.
Or is it really theirs, or do they buy it from some hospital and all these other people invested in doing a thing? I mean, we can talk about this forever, but so go ahead.
There's all kinds of abuses, but one of the poster children for that was when the albuterol inhalers, the companies that made them lobbied for the propellant to be made illegal. It happens that the propellant that was in them originally is the same refrigerant that was in air conditioners, okay? And it's a greenhouse gas. Really does do damage to the ozone layer, but there's so little of it comparatively in an inhaler. And oh, by the way, the reason refrigerants are used in that kind of an application is because they're biologically inert, so they won't do any damage to you, but they do what they need to do, which is get the powder into your lungs, right? So they actually lobbied for that propellant to be made illegal, and then once it was, with no exemption for medical use, they turned around and they got a patent on the replacement. The actual active drug didn't change.
Well, it's the same thing as the EpiPen. It was a cap. The stuff had been around forever.
Right. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, the thing that I think is interesting about this is that the entire edifice that we have in the market, I mean, you know, take the S&P 500, make it the S&P 493, and tell me what that index actually looks like for this year. It's down.
Yeah, well, I didn't say, I wouldn't have guessed it was down, but I would have guessed it wouldn't nowhere near up as much.
It's down and not a little.
Really?
Okay. Now, the reality of it is, well, and it's, you know, because it's a market cap weighted index,
yeah.
Right? All right. So, I mean, yeah. So you've got this handful of companies. And the biggest issue that I have always had with so-called artificial intelligence, and I, you know, I'll preach this to anybody that wants to listen, and have been for a long time, is that all you really are doing is the same thing that database software has been able to do for a very long time. You can do a full text search on my forum, on my blog, which takes the English language. And the way it works is by taking the English language and stemming all of the words when something is posted. So, you know, the English is, like every other language, is quite deterministic. You have the root word, you have the present participle, you have the plural, you have the, you know, the whatever, all right?
And now, if it's Latin, you'd have the past pluperfect and all the other stuff.
Well, yeah, but
thank God we're not talking in Latin.
But all you really need to do when you index this is take the stem, not the whole word, because each of those perturbations of a word is different. However, the stem is the same. So by doing that, you collapse the problem space, and then you take all the articles, a, the, I. Okay, those are things that are almost worthless in a search, and you throw them out too. So now you index what's left, and what you end up with is something that is screamingly fast. You can go through several million of the articles, the entire article base on my blog and my forum, and you can come back with a Boolean search, this word and that word, or this and that, and whatever, and it comes back in a tiny fraction of a second, and uses almost no computer resource to do this. Okay, now that is extremely useful to people that are trying to find things. Right?
But by the way, Carl, you're always into antitrust. Here's a good one. Breaking news in CNBC. Dick's Sporting Goods to shutter some Foot Locker stores to protect profits.
Oh, yeah, now, gee, let's just, why don't we just tell people that we're breaking the law?
It's like, we don't, it's like living in Chicago. I don't know it's like in Tennessee, but we look out the window right on the expressway here going to our post office. And the guys who are, by the time they leave the red light and hit the post office, they're going 85 miles an hour, also have to be in a car that is made incredibly noisy, so they draw attention to themselves. It's like this mentality I just don't sort of get. But, hey, to get back to what we're... I don't want to change the subject. I want to get back to what we were talking about a minute or so ago. What is it that in some particular areas, and I'm going to say the medical field, we can blame the government, we can blame all kinds of people, but, by the way, there's a lot of blame there. But, I mean, as you know... Once in a while, you get my right-wing friend, that'll say, well, you know, we don't want to be socialists, we want to be capitalists. And I just keep saying, well...
Yeah,
well,
okay.
You know, I'm sitting there going, okay, but, you know, I don't have the answers to this stuff. I have the questions, and I try and get as many people on the show as I can that are as bright as can be, and maybe together we'll get some kind of answer. that's as far as we're going to go, right, Carl? I mean, that's as far as anybody can go. But the idea... You look around you. Anybody who could define this, and our friend Hal brought this up 2 weeks ago. He went back and he read Karl Marx's work again. Now, of course, I haven't read part of it since friggin' undergrad, probably. And he said Karl Marx, he was not becoming a socialist. He was railing against the crony capitalism of the time, which is very similar to ours.
Where he got purchased with it. Was because you know, otherwise, you know, the man would have been dismissed as a raving lunatic. Okay. Where he got purchased with it was the kind of screwing we take today.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, that's the thing is, I mean, you've got two issues here that have been driven, and people want to play this, you know, well, you know, we could do this, we could do that, and that's healthcare and housing. Okay. And the first law of economics is supply and demand. All right, you have all kinds of games.
Supply and demand. If things are somewhat of a decent market, if not,
I understand. I understand that. But the you know if you kill demand, given an amount of supply, if you can't manifest supply, and anything that has to be made by humans can't be manifest, so somebody has to make it. All right, if you kill demand, then you will greatly depress price. All right.
Well, if you kill all the people, you can't charge a whole lot for a car.
Well, there's okay.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. You know, people rail about this stuff with illegal immigration and the impact of this and that and the other thing. But between that and the monopolization, that it you know, I had somebody say, well, you know, you can't be serious. That's populist. You know, to ban BlackRock and other firms from owning single-family homes, okay? And I said, no, the problem is this. Housing is, in fact, a consumer durable good. The premise that it is an investment and therefore is properly the place for people who peddle investments to be operating is a fraud. And, by the way, the purpose of them buying them is to distort the market and to thereby drive up prices. That's a felony. Now, if you start enforcing the law, these problems to a large degree go away. Now, they go away in ways you won't like if you happen to be someone who is, you know, making a lot of money doing this because the price go down.
Well, it's called a combination. But here's my question, Carl, and I do not know the answer, and I'm not so sure. We're gonna take a stab at why this happens, but I don't know where. Put it this way, you and I agree on an awful lot of issues. I don't know that we agree necessarily on the first thing to start. to fix it. But let's pick one product. Let's look at the EpiPen. All right, now the EpiPen has been around. Actually, was designed according to Lou. It was designed by the.
It was designed by the military. Wasn't
it? The military. So so if you had one of those heavy military suits on, and something got inside you, you needed a pen to, or you needed a hypo. This thing would break through the heavy, whatever heavy thing you were wearing, and you get the shot into your leg or whatever. And so they pretty much invented it. And the stuff that goes in there, the antihistamine or whatever it is actually really cheap.
Well, adrenaline is cost nothing.
Yeah, my doctor told me it cost her a buck and a half a shot. So anyway, so all of a sudden this lady, very attractive by the way, gets a bunch of people on her board, gets this new place, gets a patent on a cap for the thing. And we're talking something that's got to be 40 years old, maybe 50.
Yeah.
She gets a new cap, now it's become an EpiPen, and now she charges $650 a throw. Now, she was smart enough to get people on her board that were pretty connected, and they go to all these different school boards and everybody, and I think did they start out at the Department of Education? Anyway, it was decreed that in every classroom, I don't know if every school district did this, but it was advised, decreed somewhere in there that every classroom in the country should have one of these in the teacher's desk.
Just in case somebody eats some peanuts.
Or whatever. Bee flies in and nails somebody or something.
Right.
Because in my day, there weren't screens. You know, it could happen. And so you'd sit there and go, well, you know, that makes sort of sense. Well, now, instead of paying the buck and a half, they're paying the 600. Well, now, 600 times the amount of classrooms in this country is a lot of money for them and for us. Now, my question, and I think I sort of know the answer, but anywhere in this medical area, instead of saying, you and I are sitting there going, wait a minute, the technology today is we can have regular little tiny hypos that people now take for fat drugs and every other thing on earth. I don't think there's a shelf life on those things. It's got to be probably good for several years at least. We can get those for $250. Let's put one of those in the teacher's desk so you can stick somebody in the arm because you're not wearing, you know, an army suit in the classroom.
Right.
And why don't we just sell those for $5 instead of $650? Now the question is, why doesn't that happen? And that's why when people start saying, well, this is real, we don't want to be socialists. It's a dirty word, even though half of them people say they couldn't define it if their life depended on it. We don't want to be socialists. We have to be capitalists, and this is what capitalists do or something. No, wait a minute. What capitalists would do is find a way to get to the same place for $5 and not $650.
Absolutely.
And somehow or another, it's all being intercepted by something. And whether it's government regulation, whether it's insurance, whether it's cartelism, whether it's cronyism, for whatever it is, it's not working.
Well, it's cartel behavior. Here's the reality when you get down to it, okay? An insurance company cannot ever be allowed in any line of business to get involved in pricing at all, period, ever.
It's supposed you pay, and then you tell them you paid, and they pay you.
That's right. Yeah. And by the way, insurance, because otherwise, being that insurance is a regulated business and has a regulated operating margin, the only way for them to make more money is to either have more claims or more expensive claims. And therefore, they'll negotiate up instead of down. And if you aren't going to enforce the antitrust laws that say that this kind of behavior
is very
illegal,
similar to your utility companies when you challenge them on a rate, I hired the best law firm in the world to fight you. The expenses they paid a law firm now become a legitimate cost that they can charge.
Guess what? That goes into your rate.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, well, it's and it's the same problem with finding people that have any kind of a monopolist position or any kind of collusive position in a market. If you find them, the customer ends up paying the fines. It's why you have to throw them in jail, and it's the reason the Sherman Act carries criminal penalties.
You could do other things. You can wing all the old bozos off the board and say you can't serve on a board again the rest of your life. There's a lot of things you could do without putting people in jail.
That's
better than they do now.
Well, but that's effectively a punitive. That is a criminal penalty, though. Okay, it's not fine.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So the thing is that you have to. The reason you need to use, and the reason that there are criminal penalties in these statutes, is because you can't fine a cartel and actually have the cartel take the damage. the cartel just makes the customer pay the bill. So, you know,
that's the beauty of being a monopoly.
Well, yeah, it is. And any time that you have any kind of cartel-like behavior, that's what happens. Okay, and so, you know, I mean, it's not rocket science, but nobody wants to go after any of this.
It's not rocket science to you and me. It appears to be beyond the scope of any elected official and half the people you talk to.
Well, no, they're all getting bribed.
I don't think they know, Carl.
Oh, get out of here. Don't
assume.
Chief, I stood in front of, I was at a meeting full of senior citizens. It was about 7 or 8 years ago when Matt Gaetz was making the rounds because it was his time to get reelected, right, down in Florida. He was my congressperson. So I show up at this town hall, and he's talking about how, you know, they're working on the Medicare doc fix, and of course, I'm probably the only person in the room. Well, I and another guy that I went with, probably the only two people in the room that aren't on Medicare. Okay, and of course he's pandering to the audience, right? So I stick my hand up.
Well, that's what you do.
Well, that's what you do as a congressman. Duh. Yeah. I mean, the goal is to get reelected. So I stick my hand up and I say, "Excuse me, sir. I said, Mr. Gaetz, maybe you can explain to me why it is that you haven't demanded that the government enforce 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1, which, by the way, has been confirmed as valid against the insurance and medical industries in two Supreme Court cases, Royal Darwin.
All right, and here's where we're going to...
And you know what he said? You know what he said? Those cases don't exist. They're exempt.
Well, they're not exempt.
And I said, no, they're not. That's a lie. At which point he got very angry.
By the way, that's what Robert told me. They think they don't apply. Cause they think what Carl's talking about is that the insurance has an exemption. You know what they remind me of?
It's called McCarran-Ferguson.
Right. They give it an exemption that, you know, it's very similar to the NFL basically telling you they have an antitrust exemption like baseball when they don't.
Well, here's the thing, though. The Supreme Court specifically dealt with that claim.
I know that. You know that. And I know that. But they've overrun the whole thing. They've taken...
Well, I understand that. And so it's like, okay, so I've got 535 clowns plus an entire cabinet, plus a president, and it doesn't matter which party the president is in, right? All of whom are ignoring the fact that this has been ruled on by the highest court
in
the land.
Back up a second. What we're talking about is insurance companies were given, by law, the ability to share information about people.
Right.
And so, in other words, if it's a... If Carl has three drunk driving things and he decides to switch from Allstate to State Farm, State Farm can get hold of that stuff.
Right.
And know that, wait a minute, this guy's a bad risk, like a really bad risk.
Or I wrecked four cars.
Or, yeah, whatever. But the insurance company has taken that to the other side, and they use that as a way to get pricing, special pricing in hospitals, which they're absolutely not supposed to be able to do. They've turned it around the other way. And they not only does the law not say that, as Carl's saying, but there's been a couple of challenges, and the Supreme Court said, yeah, the law doesn't say that, but they do it anyway.
But it's so, you know
what, Carl? If everybody walked from the train to work and somebody snuck out of every door and kicked somebody in the ass every morning and everybody bitched about it and 10 years later, we're still going on. People would just think that's just the way we live.
Wow. You know,
and we unfortunately have gotten to that spot. It's a question of non-education. It's a question of nothing. I mean, I've had conversations with younger people. I haven't any lately, but so you know, this is when Amazon was getting real big, and they weren't. The states were so stupid that they weren't charging taxes. Now I think they do most of the time, and. They're essentially putting all your brick and mortars out of business because of taxes. And I saw people 20 years ago walk into a Best Buy store, look at a TV, go on their phone, and say, well, I can buy it here, and I don't have to pay any taxes, while they're looking right at it, reading the number off the back of the thing. And the states are so dumb they allowed that to happen. Now, whether they were paid off or not, you know, who knows. But they might just... I don't know whether they were paid off or whether they're just stupid. I mean, I don't know. Because obviously the one guy's paying property tax, and the other guy's not. Not to mention the sales tax. So, yeah. But I'm not even sure. But you say to people, what Amazon wants to do is put all these people out of business. Well, they're cheaper. You know, as soon as they're going to be out of business, then they're going to raise their prices because there's nobody to compete against them. Well, yeah, that's what businesses do.
Well, yeah, hello.
But that's not what they're supposed to be able to do. That's the point, because we clearly don't want that. But we got everything so dumbed down, Carl, that, you know, if we weren't talking to our audience, people would wonder what the hell we're talking about.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. I mean, it just, I don't know. I just look at all this stuff, and I'm like, what are you blanking? You know what I'm saying? And I mean, I just can't.
By the way, if Joel pops in, let me know.
Yeah, he's not here yet.
All right.
But I just can't get my arms around the fact that, you know, we have this debate that's been going on all the way back to, you know, when Obama did Obamacare and all this and that and everything. And when that was passed, it was essentially ensconcing without changing the antitrust laws. Now, you know, they could have done that, and then you couldn't go after it, right? Because, you know, they would have actually changed the law. But they didn't change the laws. And so...
Well, totally ignoring them is the same as changing them.
Well, okay, but guess what? Deciding that you're not going to enforce anything with regards to insurance companies being involved in something that is absolutely illegal. Hell, State Farm got spanked on car insurance by doing this when it came to repairs and requiring third-party parts.
Well, the mistake in Obamacare, and again, I think I can take it somewhat through, which I'm not going to do now. From where it began, the old system was totally falling apart.
Well, yeah.
And the old system was based on essentially hospitals insuring, hospitals being the arbiter of the insurance, where they charge the people that could pay it more than they should have to pay for the people that can't pay it. But that system was falling apart, so there needed to be something.
Yeah.
And the idea of everybody being included, the idea that came out, so look, if everybody had insurance and actually was forced to pay for it, somehow, then you wouldn't be screwing. It should come down for the high end people, and the low end people should actually be paying for the first time. Okay, so in theory, it made some sort of sense, but a lot of stuff in theory doesn't work out so well. And when you go through and you allow the lobbyists and insurance company to essentially write the bill for you, you know what it reminds me of? Okay, remember during the COVID, what was the act that gave you? You got money from the government for paying people. Was the Employee Retention Act?
Oh yeah, that was Well, that was the one where they got to steal the FICA tax.
Yeah, well, but no, you actually got dough from these guys because.
Well, no, there was money as well, but
does that mean Joel's on? I heard something from.
Yes, he is.
Well, let's kick this around on Friday because we'll do a show on Friday. I think Ricky's coming in, so we'll do a show on Friday.
All right, I'll be there.
SP Futures down 7, NASDAQ Futures down 57. Let's go right to Joel. Joel, how are you, buddy?
I'm learning a lot today, Chief. Learning a lot.
Why is that?
Because there's a changing of the guard in AI.
Really?
Yeah.
Who's the new chief?
Google.
I think you might be right about that.
Yep.
What does that do to NVIDIA?
Well, if you want to talk about the price action, NVIDIA's down $5-$6.50, and Google's up $13. And after just a monster day yesterday, and then riding the coattails of Google is Broadcom.
Yep.
Broadcom is the one that makes the chips for all this stuff. I wish I'd understood it better, but I understand price action and. Boy, oh boy, ChatGPT going to the wayside. Do you see what they've done to Oracle?
Yeah.
See what they've done to Oracle over the last couple months? I mean, who needs ChatGPT? Who's going to need all those data centers? Who's going to need all the debt they're taking on? This is a major transformation.
Do you remember, Carl would know, but it had to be what? You were on the show, Joel. Remember when the cloud was happening?
Yes.
And Microsoft was going to put all these massive data centers in. And they started the one up here, I think it was in Schaumburg or Mount Prospect or someplace. And the idea we're going to have 12 or 15 of these things around the country, and these things were going to be massive spots where everybody could go with your cloud stuff and, you know, your extra computer time you're trying to buy and so forth, which means the cloud. And was going to use 20% or 30% of all the power in Mount Prospect or whatever. I think, Joel, that one might have been completed. Might not have been. I don't know. But it wasn't the same scope. I don't think any of the other ones even got started. So when I started talking about these places needing all this power and you got to buy your own nuclear reactor to power the thing, I'm sitting there, boy, this sounds awful familiar. And now you're saying maybe we don't need all this stuff. So give everybody the nuts and bolts. Is essentially Google is contracted other people to buy chips that they can put them together in a way which gets you to AI without buying the
using NVIDIA chips.
Using these others are cheaper, less power, all the other stuff, right?
I can't comment on the price, but they're specialized hardware built by Google specifically for machine learning. And not only are they going to be using the chips, but they may, you know, after they process the chips for Broadcom, they're looking to sell to other companies as well. So
Broadcom's the chip maker, the actual chip
yes.
maker.
Yes.
Are they in Taiwan or are they here?
They're here. Broadcom, yeah.
Well, I know the company's here, but is the actual chip manufacturing down to the things that stick on your little finger, those are pretty much all made in Taiwan, aren't they, or not?
Their manufacturing locations, primarily in the United States, largest facility in Fort Collins. Okay. The other locations include San Jose, Andover, Massachusetts. They do have hubs in Malaysia, Singapore, and a new semiconductor factory in Spain.
Okay. But now this is, how did this, I don't think I'm nailing you with this one, but how did this happen like this week? I mean, this,
I don't know.
It's been ongoing for years or months at least.
I don't know, Chief. I mean, Google's been picking up. Got the big boost from Warren. Well, we know it wasn't Warren, but
what did he know?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Boy, Warren's been doing those digging into that chip research, man. You know what he's been doing. He's been digging. No, it's fascinating. You're seeing the response and the price action. If you think about it, search, Google, the king of search, and they're expanding it. And the other thing about Google is, you look at the PE that it trades at compared to, some of these other Mag 7 companies. So a whole new twist on the market. Of course, things get overdone. But, at this point, there's a 7%, almost an 8% divergence in the price action today, with Google being up 4.25% and NVIDIA being down 3.7%. So,
some of the stuff, like you mentioned Oracle, if you'd have bought, I mean, we don't have... I'm not so sure we don't have a person someplace to use our electronic platform. We don't really have anybody, Joel, that calls up and says, buy me 1,000 Oracle at 250, and by the way, I'll send you a check for 125. We don't really have any of that. That's really the way most firms make money, is charging you interest. I mean, we don't. That's not our game. But
right.
But I mean, I keep an eye on this a little bit. If you'd have bought Oracle at 250 on margin, you're getting a margin call here. You're way through your 30%.
Well, I mean, yeah, I
and,
mean,
which is, but I mean, there's pockets of margin activity in the market here, like you brought up. I mean, there's some of these stocks are way down. I mean, if you'd have bought NVIDIA, where did it get to 220 or something? You're on the edge. You're on the edge here at 176.
Yeah, well, I mean, you said 250 Oracle, and I think I got to hop after this, but you see these reaction days, right? And the day that they announced that was back in mid-September. That's when the stock hit its
Oracle
all-time
three
high.
Something. You're right.
That's when it hit its all-time high. So you look at key days like that, and it ended up selling. It tried a couple other times, but if you look at it, the actual all-time high was made at 345.72.
Wow.
345.
That was on what?
Now
it was
on sub 200.
That was on 9/11, right?
9/10 was the day. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we got some good. What's ripping out here? We got some. You know what, Chief? I got to hop. The spoos are ripping green. Yeah. Oh, what a surprise. Yep. Probably some more good news in the markets. But everyone out there, have a happy and a safe Thanksgiving. I'll be talking to Michigan Ohio State game. It's keeping me up at night. Boy, now Ohio State, they're sandbagging. They're saying that those two receivers didn't play last week. Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate. You bet your sweet pippies they're going to be out there on that field, even if they're on one leg. So it's the game. I'm excited about it. Jeez, I just don't know. I cannot remember in my lifetime if we've ever beat them five in a row. So I want to be optimistic, but it's hard.
This is in Michigan, right?
Michigan, Ohio State.
No, I mean, but it's in the big house.
The big house. Yep, look for me, Section 42, Row 46.
Michigan can probably play their way into the playoffs if they win.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, we got some breaking news. We have minor details of a Ukraine peace deal still outstanding. So that was just a little pop you got in the market. So,
oh, there you go. Now we've come right back down. Do we have Kenny?
Not yet, Chief, but we still have Carl Inhall.
All right.
Go Blue.
Well,
go Blue.
Carl, why don't you pile back in and let us know what's going on here between the – you mentioned this Friday a little bit, the Google and NVIDIA stuff.
Yeah. Well, basically – The what's happening here is that NVIDIA's gross margin is inviting somebody else, right, and other people to shoot at them, which is exactly what you would expect to happen, especially when the moat goes away, which it has. Broadcom is certainly one of the people in the game. AMD is another one in the game.
But AMD makes the chips all the way down to the little tiny ones. Does Broadcom do that as well?
Yes, they do. They are a manufacturer. And so you have Google that has decided that they've had enough of the predatory monopolistic pricing with, you know, basically 100% markups, right? 50% operating margin out of NVIDIA. They're not going to pay that. And therefore, they're going to fund the development of alternatives. And Broadcom's saying, oh, we like this idea. This is a whole new line of business for us.
Well, you know, so I'm gonna dig here for a second.
They're not going to be the only guys, by the way, that you know, that's the problem that you have with this. But see, what ultimately happens, Chief, and as you know, in any competitive market, this is what happens, is that ultimately margins get crushed, and you end up in a commodity market with commodity-style margins. And that's what happened in the PC industry originally. IBM and Compaq had crazy high prices. At the time, I was running a PC assembly place in Chicago, and we destroyed their operations in a couple of relatively large companies that were buying these things by the dozens, because we were able to source product from third-party manufacturers that were neither Compaq or IBM, put them together, and we were better, faster, cheaper, and guess what? We got the business.
Okay, the four biggest customers of NVIDIA are Microsoft. Anyway, but according to the last quarter, two mystery customers accounted for 39% of quarter two revenue, right?
Yeah, that's a problem.
But is the four big ones are Microsoft, Google, Amazon, and somebody else, Meta. Now, which of the two do you think are the mysteries? Is Google part of that?
I don't know, but my expectation is that all four of them are going to start price shopping, and now NVIDIA's got trouble.
But I mean, let's be nice here and say Amazon was 12% of NVIDIA's business. Even if they just went away, that's going to leave a mark.
Yeah, but you have to realize that there's two ways that you beat the other guy in this game. Okay, the first one is obviously you're cheaper, and if you've got that kind of an operating margin to shoot against, you can probably get there, right? But the other ones that are really, when it comes to computer technology, a really big deal, is the amount of computing you do per unit of power that you have to put in and how much space it requires. Because every watt of power you consume, you actually pay for twice. You have to put it in the chip, and then you have to pay again to get it out of the building in heat. And so the efficiency is the 900-pound gorilla in the room. And I've talked about this a lot, in that, and it is the reason that this so-called 5-6-year amortization schedule is garbage. It's two if you're lucky, because the next series of chips is faster and uses less power, and your competitor will buy them. And so if you don't, you're going to get flattened.
Well, here's your favorite buddy's AI. I'll be real brief with it. NVIDIA's biggest customers are major tech companies like Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, and Meta. Alphabet being Google, of course, as well as OpenAI. While these customers account for a significant portion, the specific top clients can change, with recent reports highlighting that two customers alone accounted for a large percentage of a quarter's revenue.
Yeah.
And beyond these cloud and AI developers, the automotive sector, Toyota, Mercedes-Benz, and General Motors are also major customers for autonomous driving and driver assistance program. Surprised I don't see Tesla in here, but they're not.
Tesla's doing their own thing, and I don't know who's exactly what they're crafting. I don't know, but I have a stinking suspicion that they've hitched their horse to NVIDIA and may have a little problem here.
I would think that the two biggest are Microsoft and Amazon. Because didn't Amazon just yesterday? Matter of fact, I'll look it up here. It was the big headline on CBC yesterday that they promised the government they'd spend $50 billion on something for the government, some kind of data center for...
Well, yeah, there's some incestuous stuff going on with the government in particular going after AI as a national security thing. And so, but the precise details of that, a lot of that's behind a classified wall, so you'll learn some of it, but maybe not enough to actually analyze it.
Well, at a meeting with a longtime client on Sunday, always fun, good guy, and we started talking about the market, obviously, because that's what I do for him, is manage money. And I said, it is a very bizarre, and actually I have a potential client coming in that has a big concentration issue in a couple of the stocks we're talking about. I won't name them. They're one of they're big ones that everybody's got, right? And you know what, Carl? I mean, if you'd have seen the chief 15 years ago, I don't think is as good a money manager as I am today. I would have looked at this more as an economic sort of thing, kind of what you're always talking about, okay? And
right.
And by the way, the fact that I argue with you all the time doesn't mean I don't agree with you. But I'm just trying to get more information out of you. But the weird part is, I was telling him about this new potential client and a couple of the stocks, and I said, I'm not as much as I know you're right that the 493 of the 500 are sort of sucked. Because believe it, we've got all kinds of clients here. They're in kind of some variation of our protected index program. And some people want to be in healthcare. Some people want to be in oil this year. How'd that work out?
How's that? Yeah, well, by the way, that doesn't look like that's turning around anytime soon.
No, but I'm saying these are legitimate decisions that people made at the beginning of a year looking at last year. And when I see this, I'm a huge, whenever I lecture, Carl, I always would say to people, you did your homework, you like IBM, and you went and bought it, and it's going to go up. Well, yeah, that's why we bought it. I said, but who did you buy it from? Well, what do you mean? I bought it in the market. I bought it through you guys. No. Who did you buy it from? You used us to buy it from somebody. Who's the somebody? Well, I don't know. I go, it's a guy just like you. And what makes you think that you're so anxious to buy it and he was so anxious to sell it that you're right that day and he's not? The look you get on people's faces, like all of a sudden you sprung three more heads. But when you, I've lost the ego, and I've had to because that's what I'm doing for people. I've lost the ego in terms of if all of a sudden these stocks keep racing up. I know there's something called momentum trade, which people just pile in because it's going up. I know there's everybody on TV hypes people to do stuff. I get all that, but I'm not willing to assume that everybody who's buying these stocks, seemingly in a narrow range or a narrow bunch of companies, are blithering idiots. They might just be right. Now, how could they possibly be right? They could be right if not just Trump, it's been going on for a long time. Maybe we are going to this German/fascist model where there's only going to be all these other stocks that aren't getting anywhere. If they got anything good, these seven guys are going to buy it. And if they don't, they're just going to go out of business. And they just might be, I hope to God that it doesn't go this way, but for 20 years it's heading this way, they just might be the old survivors. And even though they have warts, maybe, because Google's got this massive thing, Amazon's into everybody's place, for God's sake, maybe they are going to be the only survivors.
The question isn't will they survive, because I've said the same thing about NVIDIA. That's not the question. I'm not concerned. I mean, just like I wasn't concerned about Cisco actually blowing up and going away in 2000. The question is at what price?
Well, yeah, but it took him a long time to recover the stuff.
Well,
that they,
yeah, and that's the problem.
But I mean, the part that I can't, I don't like, everybody knows that, that listens. I don't like these guys going, I mean, what do I think of Amazon? I know what they do. They deliver stuff, and they've done better with that. They're in the cloud. But now people are bringing bags of cash to this person in the White House, and they're getting government, getting government largesse more than anybody ever did in friggin' wartime, Carl.
And yeah, but you wonder, you know, 2 years from, the, you know, well, another year, House turns over, and then in 2 years, and then impeachment happens, and then,
you know what? I mean, once Boeing got in, they never got out. I don't see them getting booted out, do you?
I don't know.
If the Democrats get in and these guys are halfway through a $25 billion plant or thing that they're building for the government, they're going to stop construction? I doubt it. They're going to get paid off, too.
Well, maybe. Yeah, you might be right. You might be right. But I have seen plenty of these things go the wrong way on people. And you know, oh, well, they'll never do that. Hey, listen, they said that I believed it from my own analysis, that there was no way MCI would get killed during the dot-com crash because they had 75% of all the federal government lease line circuits. Okay, you want to talk about a monopoly position.
I didn't say never.
I'm just saying.
And by the way, you know I hope it happens.
By the way, I still have a huge scar on my body from what that one did to me.
All I'm saying is, I can't, for my own, I'm learning, even finally at this age, I'm learning that it's not the free market anymore. It's not the 80s and 90s markets that I traded where sometimes we go up, sometimes we go down. The yesterday situation, I pretty much guarantee you that the same New York Fed guy wants to do interest rates way lower in the next meeting, that when last week the market gets obliterated, I'm going to say that somebody opened a faucet of cash yesterday morning, and it probably was him.
You know, may have been.
But I can't ignore this. My people are
No, I know. You can't. But boy, does that make it tough to try to figure out exactly where you go, right?
Without question. So yeah. now if I design something for a concentrator, I mean, actually, I have a couple. It's not like one guy, but there's all kinds of people who have Apple stock. I mean, I don't give investment advice because I'm not going to. Plus, I guarantee you, I got a little bit of an ego, Carl. You probably the only person on the show that can do what I do. I said, you know what? What I'd like to do is I'd like to protect some of the Apple, maybe sell a little bit of it, and actually sell some puts of the stuff we just sold lower that we could actually buy it back lower. And on the upside, instead of just selling calls, we'll do some mix of calls and repair strategies. Okay. I didn't give investment advice because nobody knows the hell I'm talking about. Yeah. I mean, you know, this is my job. You know, and a lot of the problem we have with some of the retail people that do their own stuff is they do their own stuff.
Right.
You know, and it's like the guy who owned the paint store that came to my seminar. I didn't remember him. He remembered me. And I walk in and he goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, you know, my girlfriend's meeting with some people for this house thing out in the car, so I just thought I'd wander in. I used to remodel houses just to see what everything is." He goes, "Hey, you're the chief. Why don't we make a deal?" I go, "What's the deal?" And he goes, "You know, I'm one of your clients. How about I don't manage my money and you don't try and paint a house?"
Yeah.
You know, there's something to be said for that.
No, I got you. By the way, Kenny is up.
Okay.
Well,
it doesn't matter. We're going to put Kenny on no matter what.
Oh, he's supposed to be at 8? Okay.
No, he's supposed to be at
7:45. I've been listening to this whole conversation.
Oh, you were supposed to come on when you were on, but hey, bud, how are you?
I'm good. I was just listening. I was enjoying the conversation. I wasn't going to jump in because I want to hear what Carl has to say. I always enjoy hearing that.
What do you think of we don't really know where this is going to land. You got to be lively here. You got to be light on your feet.
Isn't that the damn truth?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Nothing. What'd you make of yesterday's rally? I mean, I thought we might have a little one coming, but yesterday's was pretty good.
Yeah, no, yes, it was pretty good. I think, you know, once again, I'm not surprised, right? We have this tech trade that's going on. We had a little bit of a pullback. We had all this nervousness. Suddenly, the valuations don't matter anymore, and it's all about the Fed cutting rates. And so that's what you go. You had people, you know, going in there doing some bargain hunting, looking for some great names that got dislocated, right? Some of those big tech names are down double digits. And so they look to be on sale, right? Especially if you're expecting that we're going to rally into the end of the year. Tom Lee thinks we're going to go over 7,000 in the S&P. I think that's a little aggressive, but look, we can only hope. Maybe it does. I'm in the 6,800 camp, mid-6,800s, but you know, he's much more aggressive, and so I wasn't necessarily surprised. I was surprised at the move. Like, the Mag 7 was up nearly 3.5%. That was a big move. But I think a lot of those names had gotten really, you know, beaten up on the way down because they were the outperformers all year. So, you know, what's it really? It makes sense. Where are we? We're right back kind of in the middle of where we've been trading, 6705 on the S&P. We bounced off the trend line. We held that when we tested it last week. We held it and we bounced off. And so I think this is what we're going to see for the rest of the year. There's kind of bouncing back and forth with leaning towards a little bit higher by the end of the year. That Santa Claus, in fact, will come back and take us, like I think, to the mid-6800s. You know,
what do you think it is?
Right.
What do you think is NVIDIA Google sort of shift this morning?
It's interesting that we see this story this morning that Meta is going to use the Google chips, or they were told everyone they're going to use the Google chips. Look, I think that suggests that there's certainly competition out there, that it's a real industry, and that that's going to demand more competition. So I think it's a great, I think the idea that, you know, there's so much competition, there's AMD, there's NVIDIA, there's Google now, I think that's healthy, actually. And while it's all very interesting, I think, you know, you see what NVIDIA is doing. It's down 3.5%. AMD's down 3.5%, but Google's up 4%, right? And a lot of the Google supply is. Broadcom's up 2.5%. Celestica's up, I think, about 6/10. It's quoted higher. So I think it's a very interesting story. Do I think it's the end of the NVIDIA trade? 100% no, because I think the market is huge. And I think there's plenty of room for everybody. But I do think, look, I tried this new Gemini product the other day after, what's his name, some Benioff came out over the weekend and said he tried Gemini and he's never going back to ChatGPT. Here's the problem. I've been using ChatGPT for, you know, 5 or 6 months. It knows me. It knows how I talk. It knows how I write. I tried to use Gemini yesterday and I said, okay, I did the same thing between the two of them. I put it in chat, I put it in Gemini to see what they would each come up with. Gemini, maybe it doesn't know me, but Gemini came out, was very stilted. It didn't sound like me. It didn't look like me. But the chat one was as if you and I were talking, and I read it, and I felt more comfortable. Now, that could just be because Gemini doesn't know me yet. But it is interesting, you know, that I think the story's great. I'm not negative about it.
Kenny, what we just went through a minute ago, I don't know if you were listening, the thing is, I won't say odd, but it's seemingly unusual, is the people moving in this direction are also NVIDIA's biggest customers. And I think that's something to be concerned about.
Well, okay, is it something to be concerned about, or is it just saying that there's so much out there that, look, you know, you can buy a Ford, you can buy General Motors, you can buy a Mercedes, you can buy a BMW. There's a lot of competition out there. Sometimes you buy the BMW, sometimes you buy the Ford. What difference does it make?
Well, what I'm saying is if it turns out that Meta and Google are going elsewhere, and they're also 30% of NVIDIA's sales, it's a little different than normal, let's put it that way.
Well, okay, but see, I'm in the camp that I think that while they may be going elsewhere, do I think they're going to completely eliminate the NVIDIA chip? I didn't get that from the article, that they're going to use some of these Google chips in their data centers, are going to try it out. But I still don't, I'm not necessarily sure yet. I want to see how this story develops.
Well, I do too.
I don't think the NVIDIA story is over by all.
I didn't say it was. What I'm saying is that we've been kind of charting this, and you know, because you're on every week, there's a couple of things with NVIDIA. But man, well, you brought the one up, so don't be accusing me of this. You brought the one up where they invested $100 million into a place, the idea that the place is going to turn around and buy $100 million worth of their chips. So,
right.
there's a little bit of...
It's
a little circular. You're the one who educated it. So they got that going for them. Plus, it appears they have four people that are, you know, 50, 60, 70% of their business. So it's a little different.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, okay. But I think it's a big, the addressable market, I think, is huge. And I think it's only going to continue to grow. You know, I mean, it's amazing where we are already and where we've gone in this last year from January of this year to where we are today in terms of the technology and the uses and the conversations and all that stuff. I think it's just going to continue to explode as we move into, you know, 26, 27, 28.
I mean, when you put your When you put your picture in AI, does it know does it know the gestures?
I don't think it knows the gestures yet, but I suspect it's going to pretty damn soon.
If anybody hasn't watched Kenny on TV, not only is he spectacular on the radio, but he's even better in person because the hands tell the story. Everything's moving.
You know, it's so funny because yes, I do. It's the way I grew up. I just talk with my hands. That's it. Sometimes I'll get people that will say to me that it's distracting because my hands move so much when I'm talking that they're concentrating on my hands and not listening to me. And so if I'm on TV, like there's one guy in particular who always hits me after I'm on TV to tell me to stop moving my hands. I'm like, dude.
What do you mean? I think it's great.
Listen, I hear you, but this guy apparently gets distracted because I'm talking with my hands. I'm like, okay, then don't watch me when I'm on. What do you want me to tell you? You know what I mean? It's just Kenny,
Kenny in the OEX pit across the aisle. It was a tiny little aisle just for somebody to get down. There was one of the clerks was of this brokerage firm. Was a guy named Teddy, nicest guy. I mean, very very Italian. And he'd be on the phone. In the other hand, he's gesturing. I keep going, Teddy, he can't see you. He can't see you. And he look at me like, what do you mean? I go, you're gesturing. I can see you. I know what you're saying, but he can't see your hands.
Yeah.
But anyway, what do you make of this week? Anything to do? We got gold running up yesterday. Coming back a little bit today. A lot of stuff is kind of crazed here. But oil can't go anywhere. What about next year? We have people in the XLE. Should I tell them to get the hell out of there? Or is oil going to do something next year?
Wait, say that again?
I mean, XLE can't go anywhere. The
XLE.
The XLV, we have a lot of people, and that's the medical piece. That's had a very marginal year. Let's think about next year. Anybody be in oil? Or anybody be in medical? What are we doing here?
Okay, well, two things. The XLV, which was really negative all year, is now up nearly 13%. And that move has really happened in the last month and a half, maybe, right? Because for most of the year, it was kind of dead money. But it was opportunity, actually, because all these other things were running away and people were chasing technology. Meanwhile, I kept saying, you know, look at some of these undervalued sectors. And now healthcare has turned its head up. What is it now? I think it's in the fourth... might be in the fourth or fifth position in terms of its performance out of the 11 sectors, right? Energy is only up 4% this year, but look, energy was up big last year. It's taken a break this year. If energy goes down to, if oil stays in the 50s, which I suspect at least early into the first half of 2026, it probably is going to. You know, we've got that glut that they're talking about, which they've been talking about for months now, so the market's kind of prepared for that. It's not a lack of demand issue at all. It's an oversupply issue. But until we work through that, which I think happens as we move into the second quarter, then I think oil provides an opportunity, right? It might just churn around in here, but then I think it provides an opportunity.
Well, you just came up with the conundrum. I mean, it's one of our biggest positions, actually, for people. Not because we necessarily, but now, Kenny, this was so easy 25 years ago. You want to be in a protected index program. You got into spiders or you got into Qs. Originally, you got into spiders. That was it. It was like the only ETF, remember? Well, now, every discussion is with, you know, all the clients and what they want to be in. And maybe because of the age of some of our people, I think our biggest position is in the XLV. And so you're right. It was a dog all year, and all of a sudden, we've had two really nice months in there. Now, the question is, do we say thank you very much at our 13% and go somewhere else, or do we say it's going to keep coming back? Well, I mean, it's always a decision, right?
Yeah, well, it's always a decision, but, you know, I'm in the camp as a long-term wealth advisor that, you know, my demographic tends to be the 50 age group and up.
Well, us too.
We tend to have very, very diversified, but... position for long-term growth, and so healthcare will always have a position in the portfolio. It just depends on, are you going to overweight healthcare or not? I'm still in the camp that, look, all these baby boomers, of which I'm one on the very end of the scale, but I'm at the tail end of the baby boom generation. We're all retiring at 10,000 a day or some crazy number like that. So I think healthcare is going to be a sector that's going to continue to perform well in the years ahead, just because there's so many of us that are, you know, that are jumping ship.
Yeah, you wonder if there's going to be any sort of a change there, because the numbers, you know, what Churchill say about Americans, they'll eventually do the right thing if they tried everything else first. I mean, somewhere, and you know, Carl's the biggest proponent, not necessarily a proponent, but a big educator in this, the medical numbers, the prices people are paying, somehow or another, give it another 2 years, Kenny, and it's... It's going to have to change, or it's going to take us down. I mean, you can't be paying this much here when other people are paying. There's no way. And I don't know if anybody has the stones to take these companies on or to do something about this, but.
Well, listen, I think Trump, right, if he announces this new, they're working on some new healthcare plan where they want to give people the money directly and let you negotiate yourselves instead of giving it directly
to the drug companies. That's a 40-year-old plan.
It might be a 40-year-old plan, but if he pushes it through, right, is that good or bad?
I'm always hoping for the best. The dude was there 4 years, and now he's becoming a lame duck by the day almost, which is not just him. I mean, it's just as time goes by, I don't see any of these Congress people pulling the envelope out of their back pocket and giving it back to the drug company and doing
well,
it. It's gonna be some piece of crap. He's doing the same thing or trying to, same thing Biden wanted to do. We'll cut back on the prescription drug costs for Medicare. Okay, fine. What about everybody else? All they're going to do is raise it to other people. A monopoly is a monopoly until you break it, and they have no desire to do that. It doesn't appear. I don't think. I mean,
and you're right. Maybe they don't because it's too much money for them, right? And the lobby is way too strong to ever allow that to happen. But listen.
Well, I have somebody who listens to the show, Kenny, and contacted me about she's taking care of somebody who has cancer. And no insurance, and like she's paying for the stuff.
Yeah.
And I said, ask around, see maybe you can go outside the country or something. I mean, I don't know anything about this. I said, look around because the girl downstairs who ended up having the two different brain surgeries to fix his nerve, one that was here that didn't work was over $100,000, and then she went to Japan and the guy did it right for $15,000. I mean, we're not talking about a little bit less. So last I heard, I don't hear from these people very often, but the lady's in bad enough shape where they're not going to go, but they got something set up to go to India.
Yeah.
So sure enough, I me being the curious soul that I am, I dig up what's the difference in cancer treatments between here and in India.
Yeah.
And they go, one treatment here can be $20,000 to $50,000, over there it's $500,000 to $2,000.
Yeah.
We're not even on the same planet where it's $40,000 here and it's $35,000 over there. We're not even close.
Right. No. I agree, but then you run into the argument that we're the ones that are doing the research and development, and there's got to be return on investment and all that stuff. Some of that I get, but I do think the disparity is massive.
Well, if you and I have a monopoly, Kenny, and don't manage money for people in a very competitive world, our view of what we're worth in a monopoly is a little different than in a competitive industry, wouldn't you say?
100%.
In a monopoly, if I don't have a jet, I'm being put upon. Really? look how good I am. I mean, you and I don't get to do that, do we?
No, we do not.
Although I have a feeling you might have one stashed somewhere.
I don't. But listen, I got to jump. All right, buddy. I got to jump on. Listen, you guys have a great Thanksgiving. I'll talk to you next
too,
week.
Bud. Keep those recipes coming. I need a dressing recipe.
A dressing, okay. Goodbye.
You guys still do giblets? No, nobody does that anymore, do they? Anyway, take care. Hal, you with us?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
All right. Well, you've been listening in on stuff. What do you want to comment on? Start off. You lead.
I don't know. Just the Marx thing is going to be turned into an article for me. I'm going to turn that into an article. I'll probably call it something like Das Monopolist.
Yeah, well.
Or DOS corporatist, but I think it can be a fascinating article that would really definitely make waves. And then the thing I was talking about last week, where I really got into the incentives, the perverse incentives that the banking regulations, the changes in banking rules, and the changes in monetary policy created.
By the way, that was like three shows we talked about that. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I just submitted that article to Mises, and I think it's probably going to be published within the week, but it ended up being on the longer end. And the reason why it's on the longer end is because, I mean, you have to go back to like 2008 when interest on reserves were implemented and allowed.
Back up a sec, wait, just in case anybody wasn't listening that day. What Hal has gone through, and he read some stuff, I'll be brief here, read some stuff from somebody who talked about the current banking regulations, some Dodd-Frank, some others, and how perverse they are in the sense that since the banks have gone to this no reserve requirement, the banks, Fed has gone from no reserve requirements to this kind of weirdo capital structure sort of thing for banks, it's really buried the hell out of small loans because you don't want them because you need more capital for them because they're considered...
They're costly to maintain, they're costly to run.
If you can give one loan to Amazon and fire all your own people, you're way better off than if you have 10 people giving loans to people.
As a bank, yeah.
Yeah, you're way better. As a bank, it is. And that's not what any politician ever talks about, but that's exactly what's happening. So Carl has been writing stuff on that, and I can't wait to read it. And I mean, I had a feeling it was sort of there, but I never really got past
it. I mean, we had a feeling that it was there, right?
Yeah.
We were trying to figure out why things were happening the way they were. I mean, the Fed hasn't really been buying any securities since, like, 2022, and yet the money supply is accelerating. It's grown at, like, 5% today, and if it stays on its current trend, it could be 9 or 10% next year, year over year. So why is that? Why is that accelerating? And it's because IOR, the interest rate on reserves, is like a dam, and it holds all this money that the Fed creates and bank lending creates. It holds it behind a dam, and we've been hitting at it for years trying to figure out why this is going on, and it's just an artifact of the changes in the banking regulations that happened mostly in 2020 with reserve requirements set at 0%.
And Dodd-Frank didn't help either. They actually buried where if you're a plumbing company, you got to give a personal guarantee, where Bezos doesn't have to give one, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And, you know, Dodd-Frank also eliminated a lot of competition for the big players in the residential rental property market, the commercial and residential property markets, where it's very difficult for somebody to jump into that space. And
do you have any I actually have a specific example of that. One of the guys who I used to play, he's a client, but I won't names or anything like that. But after the trading floor kind of went under, he and another fellow used to trade for me. This guy was a broker. They got into I don't even know if the guy who traded for me was actually a very handy dude. So they had some money, that they had saved up. So they bought, like, house one and turned it around. They bought it for, you know, 60 grand. It's going back a ways. 60 grand, put 40 into it, and rented it out. It passed all the tests for whatever you need for, what's the federal program for rental? You know what I'm talking about. The one where the Fed guarantees part of it. Anyway.
Oh, are you talking about Title IX?
Whatever. So then they...
For poor people?
Yeah, well, then they got the houses out for rental, and the house now appraises at, 180 or something, or this is just, again, this is 15 years ago. It appraised for, like, 180, and they had put a total of maybe 40 or 110 into it. And now it's rented for, whatever, $1,800 a month or something, or 15, so they're doing fine. So they do house two, then they do house three. Well, now they're out of cash, but now they have three houses worth of equity. The income is more than taking care of the expenses. So they go to the bank and they go, we want to borrow some money for house four, and we'll put collateral up on the other three houses. Oh no, we need like your house.
Mm.
Well, why? And it was a corporation. Well, because you're not big enough. Now you can't tell me BlackRock. So the number seems to have been, if you got the 15 or 20 houses, we'll talk to you.
Yeah.
And this is just what you and I, everybody says, what are these two idiots talking about? We're talking about people like us and people like the politicians are always talking about. They keep getting the door slammed on their nose. And these guys, I think, topped out at three houses and never did the fourth.
Yeah.
And they could be up to 10 now. And now they'd have 10 for collateral, type of thing. But the bank said, no, we want no part of that. You're not, like, big enough. We want you sign over both of your houses as collateral. And the wives are like, that ain't happening.
Yeah.
And I'm not just the wives, but, I mean, everybody. So just what you're talking about, I just tried to give an example of how that affects people like us. and why you see somebody else buying up 500 houses, because they can go borrow money at 3% if they want. Anybody yep. can't wait to hand it. They're following them down the street to stuff it in their pocket, right? Yeah. Which is what you're talking about. So go ahead.
That's what we've been talking about.
I just took it down from the theoretical level to the real level.
Yeah. And it just hit me last Monday night when I was prepping for that class. It just hit me in the face. These capital requirements are really sick, and the liquidity requirement is really sick as well. I mean, and you combine them together, and it results in all this lending going into non-depository, non-bank financial institutions, and then that eventually gets into the margin debt. And that margin debt is blowing up the stock market. It almost works one for one. $1 added to one, it adds to the S&P 500. It's just almost perfectly correlated with the margin debt.
We've been going up. I'm looking right at it, Hal, because I knew you were going to go there. It's up. Yeah. The last numbers were October's.
There's five. There's like five 50, over a trillion.
Like 50 billion a month. Yeah.
Yeah. They're the last five prints of that FINRA margin debt is over a trillion, and each one of those set an all-time high, and that's what's pushing the S&P 500 up.
Well, it's also pushing your money supply numbers.
Yep. Because well, you look at the lending that goes to non-depository financial institutions, it freaking exploded. 45% in 10 months from the end of 2024, end of 2024 to today, it exploded like 45%. Meanwhile, C&I loans are down, consumer loans are down. Right, so who's getting the money first? Who's getting this printed money first?
I've got the. I'm looking at the FINRA thing. In December, yeah. December 20 of last year, December of 24, not December 24th, was 900 billion, and now it's almost a billion, trillion two. So, let's say it's up. Yeah. Well, that's 30. That's 33% in 10 months. That's a number.
Yeah. That's where all this money's coming to. And that I mean, so the article is titled. I think it's titled unless they change it. Perversity, policy perversity, turbocharges the Cantillon effect. And Cantillon effect is it's the discovery of who benefits first from the injection of new money. And regular people aren't touching that money until prices have gone up. Whoever touches the money first has the opportunity to buy assets before the prices go up at the moment that money is injected.
What's that?
And that's the Cantillon effect. And that's what Fisher's equation of exchange ignores, because it uses aggregates. Aggregates cloud or hide who gets the money first. And both Cantillon and Fisher both conclude that new money causes prices to go up.
So I think what those guys are miss a little bit, and again, you grade me here, Professor, if they miss a little bit in the U.S. system, is that in the U.S. system, you and I can create money. If I go in, if I pull 100 grand underneath my mattress, of course nobody will take the cash these days, but suppose they would, and suppose there's, well, here, how many supposes do I need here? If I drop that in Lakeside Bank, right, and you walk in for a loan, they can now loan you, well, now they can loan you the whole 100 if their capital's okay, but in those days, they can yeah. loan you 80. Well, now, if you put that 80 back in the bank, we just created 80 grand of new money. And if they loan that out...
And the key question is, who are they going to lend it to?
Right, but, okay...
They're not going to lend it to me and you, they're going to lend it to
I get that, but I'm saying, what we're saying here is that we're accusing the Fed of injecting money, but they're not injecting money. What happens is money is being created because of all this borrowing and all this what's going on.
The Fed created the money a long time ago, and that money's just sloshing around the banking system.
What I'm saying is they need...
Now it's coming out in form of loans.
What I'm saying is sometimes the Fed needs to retard the system to stymie the growth. The growth happens on its own.
Yeah.
They don't have to inject the dough for it to be there. And when the markets... When the economy's going down, they need to inject money just to maintain the 2% you're talking about, growth or whatever it is. But when the economy's going great, they actually have to retard the beast. They have to pull money out. That's why what the Fed's not doing right now, the last two meetings, is Powell's being daily waterboarded by Trump. They're stopping the runoff on the balance sheet. because you're absolutely correct. You say, how the hell can the money supply be going up when the balance sheet is running down, meaning that the Fed is actually selling stuff? The fact, the thing is, they're not selling it fast enough. Now, you're probably right that the money was always there on the sidelines from a few years ago when they put too much in. But right now, they need to be drawing crap out just to keep it even, and they're not doing it.
Yeah.
Am I right or
not? Well, I think what they have to do is, in order to keep this money trapped in the banking system, not coming out as loans that are inflationary, what they have to do is they have to do the opposite of what Trump is telling the Fed to do. They have to raise the interest rate on reserves.
Right.
That's the only way they're going to keep that new money bottled up in the banking system.
But Trump is a benefactor of the bifurcated system. So you're not going to get any kind of a fair, you know, it's like asking the farmer in Weimar, Germany, that is now paying his mortgage off and with stuff that's worthless. It's like telling him this is a bad policy.
Yeah.
It ain't working. I'll bet the mortgage on Durrell is a hell of a lot easier to pay now than it was 5 years ago.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely. It definitely is. And, you know, I think, I'm not saying politicians, Harris or Trump, are deliberately doing something bad. What I'm saying is we have so poorly educated people in economics and macroeconomics that people think we're stuck in this pre-2008 paradigm where if you want to lower interest rates, the Fed has to buy securities. And if you want to raise interest rates, the Fed's got to sell securities. That policy lever of open market operations affecting changes in the federal funds rate, that's been separated. Those two things are separated. The Fed can now raise interest rates without changing reserves, and it can change reserves without affecting changes in the federal funds rate. It's been bifurcated.
You know,
it's been separated.
Think of it as though it was always like that.
Well, no, before 2008, though, if you wanted to lower the federal funds rate, the Fed, because there were no real unemployed, what I call unemployed reserves in the system, you had to purchase securities from banks to push down the interest rate. And then you had to sell to push the federal funds rate up, the demand for reserves.
Well, that was always...
Those were tethered together. They're no longer tethered together.
But that was always, quote, the theory. If you were teaching a class or sitting in front of you, in the back row raising my hand all the time, if you and I went and taught a class today,
well, theoretically, whether in practice or not, theoretically they were tethered together, and that's how people think about it.
That's the way
today they're not tethered at all.
But they sort of never were. I mean, once in a while you'd get the professor would take a break from his normal stuff. What Hal and I are jousting about here is in this, the story is, I'm going to break in a few minutes, but in equilibrium, which is where you always start this stuff. Okay, if the Fed wants to lower interest rates, what they do is they put some money in the system. The example always was you went out and bought some T-bills, correct?
Essentially, and this is pre-2008.
Well, this is 1850. I mean, this goes all the way back. The Fed essentially injects some cash into the system. Okay, but in reality, what they do is they have a target rate for the interbank rate at night. And if all of a sudden there's whole kinds of borrowing going on that day where there's too much money in the system, even though they're trying to increase the money supply, they might have to retard it that week. The actual workings of the system are a lot different than the theory on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis, and I think you would agree with me on that.
Yeah, well, the problem is that we most people on the news and most politicians, they think we are in that theoretical world of 2008, and we're not.
Oh.
We're in this really perverse, sick world of banking. It is perverse, and it makes me sick, and it reminds me, I have this line from The Shooter. Mark Wahlberg plays Bob.
It's not much different than it was in 1972, and they didn't know what they were doing.
I know, but this is so perverse now, it's unreal. Bob Lee Swaggart says, what kind of sick mind would think of this? And when I discovered these really sick, perverse incentives by these changes in the banking rules, it's almost like we don't care. I mean, I used to think it was unintentional, but after reading about this and any... any PhD economist looking at this would say, dude, these consequences are going to wreck Main Street and benefit Wall Street and K Street.
You don't think that was intentional?
Now I'm just convinced that the people designing this are purposely doing it to benefit Wall Street and screw over Main Street. I mean, it is, to me, it's just deplorable and despicable.
It's a plutocracy, Al. We're heading right there, bud.
It's unapologetic, too.
Yeah.
To me, it's unapologetic. We can do it because we have power, and we don't care what you think. That's the kind of thing that's going on. And the only way we're going to change it is by changing the way we think about what the Fed is doing. That's the only way we can change
it. Well, until we get, you know, the weird part is, I think you, when some banker comes in and plunks his behind down next to some normal rep, or they probably don't even talk to a normal rep, they talk to the people up top. They say, this is going to work, and they point out all the good parts for them. And then somebody's going to say, well, that, but until we get 15, 20 politicians near the top, people in the cabinet, and I'm not just talking about this cabinet.
Well, the way we have to point that out is we have to maybe use populist language
Do you think for a second that Trump or maybe Harris or any of these people, there's a few people that are pretty smart. Do you think any of these people, when Trump lobs one out there, you know, one of his bombs every day, if you were to say, Mr. President, do us a favor, take this piece of paper and his pen and scribble out where you think this is going to take us in the next 5 years, do you think he has any capability in doing that or cares?
I think what Trump does, he looks at something and then he devises a plan to do what he thinks is best, maybe for himself, I don't know. But,
yeah, but the filter is himself.
Plan, and then he just executes it. I think he does listen to people like Bessent and
which is
and
Lutnick, dangerous.
But for the most part, you know, I think the education of the education training that is being received at universities is so bad. Macro, I joked about this like 8 years ago. Macro is in the basement, and I was literally teaching it in the basement of the School of Business at Westminster. And
we got to get a break here, but hell, look what just happened. You just read something somebody said, sent you, and immediately you pick up, wait a minute, that's what this is going to do. Okay, and by the way, it has. We're talking about 500, 600.
It explains 600. What we talked about the last one or two years.
But there's supposed to be 1,000 people in Washington that we essentially employ, elect and employ, that should have figured that out when the damn thing was passed.
Yeah.
And they're not. S&P futures up 5, NASDAQ futures down 11. We're pretty steady after yesterday's big move. I'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jacks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, North Bank Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamar, Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 3, NASDAQ Futures down 22. We'll see what's going on in the rest of the world here. Europe. We've got the DAX up 152.7%. Again, these guys are chasing us yesterday a little bit. FTSE up 39.4%. CAC round up 44.6%. So moderately bullish across the board over there. The other way, Nikkei up 33. Let's call that one flat. Hang Seng up 178 2 days in a row for those guys. So that's up 0.7%. Shanghai up 33.9%. Oil, as we've been talking about, can't go anywhere. 58.12 down 72 cents. Got to make some decisions for our people in the XLE next year as to whether we went, so oil's going to come back or not. Brent's down 74 cents, 62.63. Gold had a huge the up day yesterday. It's up another $44 today, 41.38. Silver up 81 cents, 51.14. I'm going to say we have a lot of people that are in gold and silver. I'm going to say yesterday was the best day we've ever had on an individual day. They're down from where they were at the tops, but yesterday was a really quite the day for our clients, so we'll see if it keeps going. FX, pretty much stuck here, 115.47 on the euro, 131.5 on the pound. It hasn't moved for a few days. Crypto, which has been all over the place, it was way down yesterday. And then it came back up. Now it's down 1,300 today, 87,613. It's hanging in there in the low 80,000s is low to middle, down from the 126 of a few weeks ago. Ricky, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Good morning, Chief. It's currently 47 degrees right now with a high of 53. A little morning rain today, otherwise mostly cloudy. Brief evening shower tonight and increasingly windy with a low of 34 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 52 degrees right now with a high of 73. Mostly sunny and nice and dry for holiday travel. Tonight will be clear with a low of 49 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe's, 13 minutes. We're looking at about 28 minutes. Iman Edens from Lane Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf, 26 minutes. 19 minutes, Dan Ryan from 95th, and lastly, Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan, 32 minutes. Let's talk sports real quick. Stars face off at Oilers today at 8 p.m. Yesterday, the Bulls lose to Pelicans 130-143, and Suns lose to Rockets 92-114. Last Sunday, Bears beat Steelers 31-28, and Cardinals lose to Jaguars 24-27. Week 13 is starting tomorrow. Bears at Eagles on Friday, November 28th, and Cardinals at Buccaneers on Sunday, November 30th. Back to you, Judge.
Isn't it funny how when we talk about this stuff and. Even guys like us, and you're, you know, obviously you're more in this a little bit. I am on the trading side, but we see, you know, stuff that sort of happens. You know, you see, I see a few years ago, guys that can't get a loan, it sure looks to me like they can or should have. And you walk into Lakeside Bank or any place and you go, hey, don't you guys do car loans anymore? And you go, well, we would for you, but we don't really have that business anymore. And or there's no real action. There's some banks that still do it, the smaller banks, but then you look at something like this and you go, wait a minute, look at the difference in rates and look at the difference in ease of loans, and you read this from a bill that's been around for a while. I guess we shouldn't, between Dodd-Frank and the stuff you're talking about, I guess we shouldn't be surprised, should we? But, that you know, they used to say in a trading floor, there's three types of people in the world, hell. One type makes things happen, one type watches things happen, and the rest wonder what happened. And I think they got a lot of us in the third category, don't they?
Well, yeah, I think the ones that are just kind of like walking around and letting things happen, they're walking around with a pebble in their shoe, and that pebble's not big enough to make them outraged. But I think training young people in macroeconomics of what really is going on is really really the only way we turn this around, and it starts with an article like the one I wrote for Mises Institute, and hopefully it goes viral and somebody in the administration reads it, and or maybe Democrats read it and they want to get ahead of this from a populist perspective, because I think we're getting to the point where we're getting outraged by all this cartelizing that the federal government's doing in healthcare and banking. I mean, we're getting to the point of Mark's rage, I think. At least I am. I'm looking at this and I'm like thinking I'm getting to the point where I have Marx's rage against this system that is not free market capitalism. There is no way you can disguise this or talk about what's going on as free market capitalism. There's just no freaking way. This is pure, unadulterated. Government creates these cartels and these monopolies and then protects them from competitors domestically and internationally.
Well, once you take your first check from the drug company, can't be half a gangster, Hal.
Yep. Yeah, I mean you're full on gangster when that happens. And I'm sorry, following orders doesn't wash with me.
No.
I'm actually livid with this article. I mean, I'm writing it, I was freaking angry writing this thing. And it just, you know, I used to think maybe it, you know, it's people wanting to do good, and then hell's paid with good intentions. Nah, I'm actually convinced that that's a big bald-faced lie.
Well, the my concern. Let's walk. You know, when you're talking to me, we somehow have to get from the theoretical, which we have no disagreement on, into how the hell does this happen? And I was not alive when it happened, but one of the big cases.
Well, I think, Tom, it's really important to point out when the capital requirements and the liquidity requirements replaced reserve requirements, and it was in March of 2020.
Right. Well, I'm walking down a kind of a little bit of a different road here, because we've already agreed we've already had too much agreement for the show. When I was young and in college, and people talked about antitrust cases and so forth, even then I got a sense, Hal, that when they broke up Big Oil, which is long before me, was that Teddy Roosevelt? Somebody busted up Standard Oil, right? And they brought in the undertaking. Once you let it get there, I'm going to say at least a decade, massive amount of governmental lawyering, people fighting back against oil, give it a money, the outrage that it took and the to get it done. You know, it's one thing to say somebody should go punch the bully in the nose. It's quite another to be the guy who does it, right? Especially if the bully's huge. You might want to run him over with your car, but it's pretty tough to go up, against Mike Tyson and say, by the way, I'm going to punch you in the nose. It took like a decade. Now, in my lifetime, I remember the breakup of AT&T. Might have been 10 years. It might have been 15. It was an amazing undertaking. It's an amazing undertaking. It took a decade, at least. Then you broke them up into these smaller places, and all of a sudden, the next 15 years, they all got bought back by each other, and you wonder if you even did anything. But it's one thing to have you and Carl and me, I'm with you guys on this, to say somehow we shouldn't have let all these drug companies combine to where we got like three or four left. I'm sure there's more than three or four, but we didn't need to let Bristol Myers take over Shrib. We didn't have to take whoever took over Shearing Plough. We didn't need any of that stuff. There weren't that many of them. And all of a sudden, what are we going to do for the next 15 years? Fight this battle? First of all, there isn't any gumption because everybody's getting paid by these guys, all the way down to some of the state legislatures now. I mean, what would it take? What percentage of the effort of government for the next 15 years would it take to bust this up to a point where you and I know where it has to be? I mean, I can't imagine it happening. The only outrage we're seeing is you and me and Carl, for God's sake. And other people who are paying for this stuff wondering why. Why am I paying?
Well, in Utah, I remember the last thing I remember about the news in Utah was the fact that the Republicans in the state legislature sided with the teachers unions to not expand like charter schools and vouchers for poor kids to choose a different school by giving them a voucher to go to a private school or something like that. And then I read about how those Republicans took lots of money from the teachers union. So that is what we're up against.
Yeah.
Is people will use the rents that they rent is just a way of talking about that surplus that Marx said that firms, monopolists steal from the workers. It's just that surplus that the benefits that accrue to you for engaging in voluntary exchanges, we call that surplus in economics. And when you have a monopoly that is set up and protected by the state, your surplus is more than it would be otherwise, and you use that, and we call that rent seeking. You use that money to maintain those protections granted by the state, and you use that additional money to protect that monopoly position that you've been granted. You use it to lobby the politicians, and that's what really we're up against. And bipartisan problem.
It is, in the sense that they won't fix it.
Yeah.
But the separation, and this, this is going to sound crude, but it's, you judge me, you're the professor. On the Republican side, everybody knows we can't sustain this medical stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, most people that have I won't even say an adding machine, if you got a pencil and a piece of paper, we can't sustain it. Well, the Democratic side is basically, we just got to keep feeding the alligator with money. And
you got to keep giving the subsidy to the insurance company.
Yeah, you got to keep giving all the stuff out.
And that's just subsidy to the insurance company goes 100% to them. It doesn't come in the form of lowering our prices.
Right, it goes into the overhead.
Just like when you subsidize Teslas, it goes into the billionaire's pocket, not ours.
I don't think a doctor's gotten a raise in 10 years.
Yeah.
Anyway, but on the Republican side we just won't cover people we don't care about. We'll just let them die. Well, okay. I mean, that's maybe a little too harsh, but that's essentially...
Well, I think the Trump position is to give the subsidy directly to a person.
No, his position right now is to cut off Medicaid, cut off the states we don't care about, and if the states cover it, that's fine. If they don't let him die, I never met the guy.
I've heard him say that he wants to give the subsidy... That, instead of giving it to the insurance company, he wants to give it directly to the
that's
consumer.
Recent. But so they can buy. Okay, but it's... Yeah. It's another one of Trump's BS thing. He's never... The point is, one side wants to keep funding it. The other side doesn't, okay? Yeah. Neither one is a solution, is it?
Oh, the solutions are horrible on both sides.
Yeah, well, so, you know, neither one of them... I see these guys come in front of Congress. Let's pick a pill, my favorite pill, because I have half the people I know are in it. Let's pick Eliquis. I don't hear one guy say, hey, bleep... And I don't know if you can swear in Congress. This pill you're charging $10 for, what does it cost you to make? I've never once... Does the guy say, I'm not coming if you ask me that question? And I don't want some long list of bullshit about how the money's going for new research or any of that kind of crap.
It's not going to research. It's going to lobby the politicians.
Yeah, it's going and it's going for his salary.
Monopolies in place.
If you're charging $10 for something that costs you 30 cents to make, I got a problem with it. I mean,
hey, Tom, I'm going to give you an example in the audience, an example of how the system we're talking about works. In streaming and in software downloads, right, the price is probably set by choosing a price such that the elasticity is -1. That represents the maximum you can extract from the consumer.
Much as you can possibly get without them quitting.
Yeah, that model, it can be applied to research and development or pharmaceuticals. And it's not the model we're using in pharmaceuticals with third-party payers and patents and monopoly positions created by government and protected by government, and then the blessing of the FDA, a marketing tool where they got FDA approval. All that stuff doesn't happen in software, in Coca-Cola. We're talking about the supply of what's called an intangible good. An intangible good is one where the extra unit, the extra ounce of soda, the extra, the millionth and one, going from 1 million to 1 million and 1 million and one downloads, doesn't change the cost of production. That's what we're talking about in terms of intangible goods. And in the industries where we have intangible goods, there's tons of research and development going on. And prices are held low by relatively open and free competition. When people say, if we get rid of these patents and these monopolies, there's not going to be research and development. That is pure BS. It is a 100% fabricated lie. And the reason why I say that is because there are a lot of people out there that go to college that have a passion for biology, that have a passion for solving medical problems. The research is going to continue, whether they have patents or not. And what's going to happen is we're going to have more and better healthcare, and it'll be cheaper. So we have to get rid of this ridiculous notion of all these patents protecting these very powerful pharmaceutical companies.
Well, here's how things can get. Sex is pretty simple. Yeah, we can manage to screw up sex, right?
Yeah.
I would say that if you talk about a patent, if you went to any library, coffee shop, or bar and say, look, I want to get rid of patents, the outrage, everybody has this vision plunked in their head by somebody of a guy like you or a guy like me going in his garage, hacking around, you know, after dinner instead of watching TV or whatever other people do, going to the bar, hanging in there and in his garage, you know, me at the Intel guys or whatever the hell they were, and coming up with a screw, a machine, a software thing that is unique, for you not to get some sort of protection for that over a period of time is totally un-American. However, if you look back at the entire history of patents, you find out that the patents have done more harm than good, probably. And
yep,
you have nothing but companies that buy up 5 zillion patents, and as soon as Hal Snar walks out the back door of his garage with something that is uniquely, they immediately, if it's good, they're going to pummel you with 15 different patent infringement suits. Man, how many How many people in
America... They purchased this IP, and then they sue the crap out of everybody.
But how many...
To maintain their monopoly power, and the state blesses it.
If you... Just as a... I'm not a patent attorney, but I'll walk you through this, because I wasn't trying to raise money for them, because we don't do that, but I was very interested in... these are people that had a machine that did something very unusual, and you would understand what they did, because it was a machine that absolutely could figure out what was in water everywhere. So the Coast Guard used it, all these companies that research in the ocean, the Navy used it. They could tell you if there was a certain amount of magnesium, or if it was poisonous, not poisonous. Anyway, it was an amazing system. And I said to the lady, would you get a patent? Oh, no. The minute you turn something into the patent office, other people immediately seem to know about it.
Yep.
And right out of the gate, it's like putting it in a newspaper. Now, they're not supposed to do that. Now, the patent office then will, you apply for a patent, they go through and they do a search, allegedly, supposedly on the QT, and they say, nope, there's no patent like that. So they issue you a patent. Well, the next day, if somebody, they might not even have a patent like that, but they're going to say, wait a minute, you're infringing on my patent. You could have four or five people like that. Now, none of the defense is on the patent office for granting you the patent and saying nobody's close. Now the entire defense is on you. So the mechanism, basically, whatever theoretical positive that there may have had isn't there. Now, and drugs especially the same, because we were just talking about Carl. How is it that for 15, 16 years, all these guys that are cartels and all this other kind of stuff, how they managed to not compete? How is there not a third blood thinner after 15 years when these guys are charging the same amount they did 15 years ago? 15 years is a long time for somebody to not come up with something else, don't you think?
Yeah.
Does it work or doesn't it? I mean, we had Father Fitzgerald, who was our teacher at Notre Dame, and he was so against patents. Hell, if he was still alive, you could drive to Seattle and be sorry you got there. The dude had every history. You name one.
A patent is just a government protection, a permission to do commerce in the kingdom. And this is the kind of thing that Marx railed against. Marx was not railing against free market capitalism. I don't care what people say. He was railing against this system of power and privilege bestowed by the state to protect very powerful, wealthy, former maybe nobles.
He was members of the aristocrats. He was after crony capitalism, plutocracy, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
But anyway, if you walk around, even though it's old now, people have digital stuff, young people don't know what I'm talking about. But if you ask what put Kodak on the map, what are people going to say? They're going to say the Instamatic camera, right?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't invent it. That was invented by Brown Camera Company.
Yeah, good. The guy, the rubber, the tires. What was it? The guy that invented tires. He ended up penniless.
Yeah.
And the company that has his that uses his name used that name in honor of him. But I think he died penniless and broke.
Was that Goodyear? Or was that Goodyear?
Goodyear, yeah.
But they Kodak sued Brown Camera Company, saying that was really their pet, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
And they drained Brown Camera Company so much that they ended up buying them. And after they bought them, the court came out and ruled in favor of Brown Camera Company, but there wasn't a Brown Camera Company. Does anybody think Alexander Graham Bell really invented the telephone?
Yeah, the guy that invented the TV was a potato farmer in Rigby, Idaho, and there's a museum marking the invention of the guy that invented the TV imagined the ray beam going through a potato field, one potato plant at a time, up and down the rows, and that's how he invented the TV. And I don't think he profited from his invention at all.
We know who allegedly was involved in that. I'm not involved in the guy in Idaho. The dude that was the head of British Secret Service during the Second World War. A guy named Bill Stevenson.
Mm-hmm.
He's a brilliant, get a load of this. He's a brilliant mathematician, sort of like you. He was an inventor. He also was a light heavyweight boxing champion.
Wow.
And he was with a group. I don't know if they invented the TV specifically, but they they invented the video screen or something in Britain. He was part of that invention. These are the kind of politicians the British had compared those to ours, right?
You know, the big problem with the patents is sometimes these innovations are invented simultaneously, like calculus.
Yeah.
Calculus was invented by two people about the same time, 800 miles apart. And can you imagine?
Well, you got to run to the patent office. Duh.
Can you imagine Newton getting a patent to block Leibniz out of calculus? That's the problem with patents, is some of these ideas occur at the same time, and the patent office is going to decide who gets the right to sell it and who doesn't.
Well, you also, I mean, in the medical side, we had, and the thing that you've opened my eyes in your own, I think, to this banking crap.
Yeah.
Well, the lady we had on, I think she's going to go to Yale, Katie, who was doing the medical research. Remember her? She came out a couple times. And she was talking about, she was working on some orphan disease. But let's say, for instance, you and I, you know, let's pick a disease. The one I always pick is sickle cell. It's been around, you know, the disease has been around forever. It affects a lot of people, mostly African America, but I'm not sure entirely. So if you and I, you know, suppose we, you know, we'll dig into your wallet, pull out a few butterflies and or moss, as they say, and we throw $2 million at Northwestern or someplace for sickle cell. Now, all of a sudden, there's probably a couple professors there or someplace that are working on it, and they maybe have gotten a government grant, and maybe they've raised money from other people, and maybe they're donating their time, and poor Katie's working there for all the rice she can eat, right? So all of a sudden, there's this big thing, and guess what? One of these days, out pops a cure for sickle cell or a managed way to manage it or something. Somebody, let's say one of our big favorite drug companies, zeroes in and somehow buys this from somebody. Because everybody's probably signed a piece of paper saying that Northwestern, you know, gets this, even though all they do is apply overhead. It's our money. So they're gonna. What did Katie say? The overhead's like 200-300%. It's huge. So, okay. Now, all of a sudden, Merck comes in and buys this thing, and now it's a patent. Well, wait a minute. You and I just ponied up 2 million big ones. Where's our share? What about Katie's share? What about the doctor that went to? Where's the government share? I mean, really? These guys get to buy the whole thing and charge, you know, $1,000 for something that costs $100 for the next.
And then they have the resources to snuff out any competitors out there saying they're infringing on their patent.
But how could they possibly say it's theirs? They weren't even around when the thing started, were they?
Yeah.
I mean, this is crazy, isn't it?
Yep. Well, you know, this is one of the problems of the patent thing. You know, I'm an economist. I'm mechanical. I'm electrical. I can fix things that are electrical. I can fix things mechanical. I'm probably the only PhD economist out there that worked in a nuclear power plant and got a 1-year automotive certificate.
We always say you're very unique, Hill.
But when the triplets came, my wife and I weren't getting any sleep. My parents had both passed. My in-laws living in Brooklyn, New York, and we're living in Utah. And I got to figure out a way to feed 8-month-old babies some semi-solid foods that I, you know, mix up in the blender. And I went to the store, like Walmart and Babies R Us, and I found a bunch of products, and I combined them into this zero-mess baby feeder. I could feed triplet babies ground up like spaghetti or minced spaghetti meatballs or minced whatever. I can liquefy it.
This doesn't sound so good. You put jardiniere in there or some cheese?
But the kids loved it, and I was trying to expand their palate, for one, for vegetables and fruits and different kinds of things. So I was trying to expand their palate, but I was also trying to feed them efficiently without creating a mess, because every product out there created a massive mess that you had to clean up. I called it the zero mess baby feeder. I could feed 3 8-month-olds semi-solid food.
This sounds like something out of the Three Stooges, but
it worked so freaking well. Then I applied for a patent pending, and I think it got denied. I got the patent pending, but the patent got denied because I combined, it was a Frankensteinian product. I combined components from different patented products into one. And I think that's ultimately why the patent was denied. I should have just went to market with it.
Or somebody looked at it, stole it.
Yeah. I've been looking to see if anybody stole my idea. Nobody stole my idea because I don't think they've been in my mindset where I have three babies who you know, diapers, burping, feeding, diapers, burping, feeding, sleep, puts you in a situation where you're personally not getting any sleep.
Someday you're going to be
and
90
they,
years
they just
old.
Don't understand the power of what I invented.
Someday you're going to be 90 years old, and they're going to be taking care of you, and it's all going to come back.
Yeah, I'm going to be eating them from the zero mess baby feeder. I even had the marketing set up, Tom.
Well, you know, I'm getting to be such a conspiratorial.
I even had the marketing set up for this product. My wife would be coming down the stairs, seeing me with the zero mess baby feeder, the three babies sleeping on top of me, and I'm like watching the sports game with the one hand with the remote and the other hand with the zero mess baby feeder, and she's like, "He's getting some tonight."
God, well, what do you think? There's people at the patent office and they see a good one, let people know about it.
Well, you know, I've always thought that when Google Play came out, the Google Store came out, the App Store came out, I always thought when you typed in a description for an app, I always thought that there'd be somebody at Google saying, "Hey, that's a good idea. We're going to create an app from that."
Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me that people at the patent office, when they get these ideas, oh, come on. I have students probably selling the attendance codes to people who are not in class. Who then can, you know, they might be a state away.
Wasn't it easier just to see it? Wasn't it easier just to see the people in front of you and take attendance that way?
Well, yeah, but when you have 180 students in the classroom, it's kind of hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can see students selling the code for the day's attendance.
Hey, I got a question. Is your various schools, do you guys get a chunk of people on the GI Bill?
We do. Have a few veterans, and at Westminster I wanted us to go after the veteran market more aggressively, because the new GI Bill covers everything and they're full-time tuition payers, and no discounting is necessary, because the GI Bill just covers everything today.
And we've
and I'm surprised.
By the way, thank you for your input into that whole thing with the veterans, because I thought that was one I've had nothing but people writing me saying it was about the best, you know, week and a half we've ever had. But why do some schools, like Talia was talking about, there's a lot. She went to Columbia, Columbia. That's one in Manhattan, right? She said there was a lot. There were some there. Now Notre Dame has a big ROTC presence. I never saw a veteran in any class. And there might have been some. I just didn't see them, but. Some schools, people seem to. Is it mostly in bigger population centers where people can have a job as well? I mean, you're not going to go to South Bend, get a job, and go to Notre Dame. I mean, that ain't going to happen.
I would argue that most veterans are probably from my experience in the Navy, most veterans that I knew were from smallish communities. And so when they go to the military, they wanted to escape that small community. And then once they're in the military, they realize how great it was. And then all they talk about how great their hometown was. And as soon as they get out of the military, they want to go back to their hometown. And I think that's what's really going on with veterans, is that I think they're probably concentrated in areas that are not really urban. They're probably more smallish hometowns. And the GI Bill in your day was a couple hundred dollars a month.
Okay.
Today, it includes tuition, books, supplies.
I think it was full tuition. Stepfather, what?
Well, when I got the GI
Bill, he went to DePaul, but I think
there
were a lot of people went to DePaul from Chicago in the GI Bill.
When I got the GI Bill in the 90s, it was $400 a month, and then it was bumped up to $600. That was it. That's all it was.
Well, but now you could have gone to, you know, a Western Illinois or someplace for that in those days, right?
Well, so, my tuition at Lewis Clark State College was probably $1,700 a semester. When I was getting the GI Bill for $400 a month.
Well, that's not so good. What'd you do for the rest?
Well, I refereed high school basketball. I made a lot of money cash under the table refereeing high school basketball. It's back when they would pay you with the cash receipts from the ticket sales.
Well, yeah. Well,
it was nice.
You could also do a park district. They always paid cash.
Well, the
actually,
refereeing
I'm not so sure they did, but I think they did.
Refereeing was great because I could make, in college, I could make like $68 a night in cash for about 2 hours worth of work. And then the tournaments, the Indian Nation tournaments at Lapway, Idaho, or the AAU tournaments, my brother and I would make $300 or $400 cash for a weekend
of refereeing 15 games?
Well, I know that we used to play in various places, whether it was softball or whatever, and one guy, he was a really good ref, and I know him pretty well. A guy named Chico Driscoll is his name. And I go, you know, what are you doing in Mount Greenwood? He goes, you know what? I get $25 a game. I'm four blocks from my house. He goes, if I went and did a small college, I'd get $300 a game. It's a three-hour drive up and back. I'm paying my own gas. He goes, I'm almost the same place.
Yep.
He goes, plus, you know, I know everybody here. We went for beer afterward. It's a hell of a lot more fun, you know, for $75 than it would be for, you know, $250 or $300. Because, I mean, in those days, you know, if you're playing, a junior college or something, they're not paying much.
No, they're not, no.
Anyway, S&P futures down 6, NASDAQ futures down 86. We're hanging on to most of our stuff. Big story this morning is the announcement out of Google and Meta talking about their own chips, which got... As Google and Google's up almost 4%, Meta up 2%, Nvidia down almost 5%, and Oracle down a bunch.
Competition.
And Oracle's down 2.5%. So we're seeing a swing here from place to place. Again, kind of unusual in that these companies that are doing this are also Nvidia's biggest customers, which we've talked about earlier in the show. But hey, Al, thank you. Have a nice Thanksgiving. Are you guys hosting, or what are you doing?
I'm making the sides. My wife bought the turkey from Popeyes to try it out.
Well, you mean you're going to get it? You go there and get
it? Well, Popeyes is going to make the turkey for us, but I'm making all the sides.
Well, there you go. Well, you got to go. Yeah. You go get it in the morning there from where you do?
I told her she has to go get the, because I usually cook the turkey roasting pan. So I go, you have to go pick it up.
Turkeys are only like 50 cents a pound this year.
Oh, I know, yeah. Well, I bought two of them at the Army base in Fayetteville. I bought two of them there in my freezer, and it was like $5 for each one. It was crazy cheap.
God. All right. Well, let me know how good the Popeyes was next week. Again, we'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.